start the meeting, please, can I make it blatantly clear that it's absolutely unacceptable that members are waiting for officials to arrive. It's an absolutely unacceptable. Secondly, I want to make it clear that the presentation arrived last night. This morning, in fact, which is also unacceptable. Sorry, can I ask the officials to listen while we're speaking and not have their own conversations? This committee has got a rule that we want our presentations at least a week before the time. The presentation arrived this morning. That, together with the fact that we are waiting for officials to start a meeting, is just simply unacceptable. This is not the way that we conduct our business. Can I ask the department to start immediately? And can I say to members, the purpose of today's meeting is to focus, and I want the Department of Justice to do exactly that, please, to focus now. Yeah, that's part of the thing. You're supposed to be set up before committees get here. Please switch off your microphone. Members, this meeting of today is a preparatory meeting for the police committee. There will be a joint meeting with Justice, the Police Committee, and all other committees that are relevant to the Child Justice Act. We therefore want the Department of Justice and SAPS to focus purely on SAPS's role in terms of the implementation of the Criminal Justice Act, the challenges, etc., etc. So can we hand over to the delegation to introduce themselves and then immediately to start, please?
Apologies for the late start. From the police, we are represented by myself, Major General Pina from Visible Policing and Brigadier Nati, Major General Johnson from Detective Service and Major General Haldas from our Executive Legal Officer's Office. Representing the Department of Justice is Advocate Kambula, who will be doing the presentation as requested. I think that's it. Thank you, ma'am. I'll be handing over to Advocate Kambula.
Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will start by apologising for having arrived late. I had a situation at the hotel that made me not to leave, but I really apologise for that. And I would also like to apologise, secondly, for not having submitted the report. I was a presentation a week earlier. We received the invitation by email on Friday afternoon, and that is why we are here. And you know, without the presentation, having forwarded it, and secondly, that is also the reason why other departments are not here, because they did not receive the invitations, and when we invited them, then they indicated that it is actually a last-minute invitation. So we would like to apologize for them as well.
Can
just to stop there. No other department was invited. And it's not up to anybody else to invite other departments. This committee, and I made it clear, I said it's a preparatory meeting for the police component of the Child Justice Act. So it's not up to anybody else to invite other departments. We wanted SAPS to be here, and we wanted somebody to present on your findings. That's all we wanted. So can we continue, please, with the presentation?
Thank you, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The presentation is, of course, on the second annual consolidated report on the implementation of the Child Justice Act. We will cover the background and the overview and the governing structures and also the key priority areas of the National Policy Framework. And the Act, as everybody probably knows, is that it started to operate on the 1st of April 2010, and it is a legislation, therefore, that takes a collaborative approach to the implementation thereof. In other words, it calls for all the departments to come together to implement the Act. It is also a legislation, therefore, that places a responsibility on the Department of Justice to lead its intersectoral implementation. It is also a legislation that seeks to establish a criminal justice system in South, I mean a child justice system in South Africa. And it also provides special measures for children in conflict with law to break the cycle of crime so that they go back into the community and become the law-abiding citizens and also the productive citizens. In our presentation, we will, of course, make reference to SAPS in terms of their mandate in the implementation of the Act, and also make some indication on the successes that have been achieved in the implementation of the legislation, and also cover the limitations that we have experienced through the process. The Act takes a collaborative approach, as I have indicated. It establishes, it authorizes the establishment of the intersectoral committee, which is constituted by a number of heads of the following departments and institutions. So it is chaired by the DG of Justice and Constitutional Development, and it's got the membership from NPA, that is the NDPP, is also part of the committee, the National Commissioner for SAPS, and also the National Commissioner for Correctional Services, and also the DG for Social Development and DG for Health and Education. However, because of the demand of the monitoring aspect in the implementation of the legislation, the DG Intersectoral Committee has extended the invitation for additional membership to the Director of the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, and also we have also extended the DGISC has also extended the representation to the National House of Traditional Leaders. The governance structures of the implementation of the legislation, therefore, we have the DG Intersectoral Committee that is at the executive level. And then when you go down, you have the National Operational Intersectoral Committee that therefore executes the operational actions that come from the DG Intersectoral Committee. And at provisional level, we also have the provincial fora that are also responsible for the implementation of this legislation. In other words, then you find the governance structures at all levels of implementation. the national policy framework of this that is attached to this legislation, therefore give guidance on how we should be implementing and how we should be measured in terms of implementing the legislation. So it stipulates 10 key priority areas that we should be adhering to when we do the implementation. So the first one is going to be the building capacity. So I have structured the presentation in terms of the 10 priority key, the priority areas of the national policy framework. Honorable Chair, it's apparently the wrong presentation that I have been given. And on the copies, you have the actual presentation. Okay. So we have structured the presentation in terms of the key priority areas of the national policy framework. So if you look at this table, then it sort of gives us an overview of the performance of the various departments in terms of implementation, in terms of training. So if we look since the focus now is on SAPS, SAPS delivers the in-service training programs, and they reach 8,995 police officers. They also have a program which is focusing on vulnerable children. So it also targets, it also focuses on the Child Justice Act. And with that program, they were able to reach 5,065 members of staff. But if you look into this table, you will see that in the previous year, that is because we are taking the comparative analysis, in the previous year, they trained 18,540 police members. And in 2011-2012, they trained 14,060 police members. But then you can see that as a reason for that, when we were looking into doing the analysis of the training, we realized that they conducted the informal training sessions at all the police stations. And then the numbers for those informal lecture sessions were not provided for at the time of the development of the report. So we did not want to deviate from what from the content of the report at the time of the tabling. But the total now, combining the two financial years, they have reached 32,600, which is quite a commendable number. And with justice, therefore, we trained in 395 clerks, that is in the first implementation year. And in the second, it was 496, and then we have a total now of 891. And so it goes to DSP and LASA. The NPA also trained 349, but experienced a decline in the last financial year and trained 214. But the reason for that is because at the first year of implementation, the focus was on ensuring that everybody received training as much as possible. But then when they were doing the second year of implementation, the focus was therefore primarily on the people, on the prosecutors who are handling these issues. In the area of the assessment of children, which is the responsibility of the Department of Social Development, there is a decline in the number of children assessed, bodies from 32,500 to 18,334. And when it comes to the children who have been charged by staff, we also noted a decrease from 75,435 to 57,592. But then there are reasons that have been tendered for that. The department conducted a research at the beginning of the last financial year to determine as to what are the causes for the decline, that is in terms of the children access and also the police. But then the research that we did could not give us indicators, clear, conclusive indicators as to what was actually causing the variance. But what now we have done, the National Operations Intersectoral Committee has selected a child justice information task team to look into the challenges, or probably, let me not say the challenges, the causes for the variance in these numbers. And the task team is in a process actually of initiating this project and the target areas have already been identified as Mpumalanga, and the other one is gonna be in Gauteng. And what this task team is gonna be doing actually is to check as to why are we having less children who are charged, and why are we having less children that are assessed. So we are still waiting for the results, therefore, based on the performance of the task team. In terms of the preliminary inquiries, this is the responsibility of the Department of Justice. We have experienced an increase here in the number of preliminary inquiries conducted. They moved from 14,471 to 17,822. So we have an increase of 3,351. This is a positive indicator that we might be going in the right way towards establishing a child justice system in South Africa, because of the prospect, therefore, of having children diverted from the ordinary criminal justice system to the child justice system. Now, coming to sentences, the Act, as we know, it introduces a number of non-custodial sentences. And when we took a comparative analysis now, looking at the first year of implementation of the legislation and the second, we noted a great improvement in terms of sentencing. Community-based sentences, as you can see there, that in the first year of implementation we had 60, but then it increased to 795, and that therefore reduces the number of children in our prisons. Restorative justice sentences, they moved from 137 to 405, which is quite a good indicator as well. And the fines that have been imposed, they moved from 34 to 37. The correctional supervision and sentences, there at the first year of implementation we had 804, and in the next financial year we had 302 sentences that were noted for correctional supervision. And for children admitted to compulsory residence in child and youth care centers, we saw there is also a notable increase there from 110 to 353. And when it comes to imprisonment, which is quite a good number, we moved from having children who have received imprisonment sentences in the first year, there were 536, but then we saw a huge decline that took us to 94 children. In terms of the diversion and the alternative sentencing, there is therefore a table at the end that deals with that heading, where you see diversions that were made in terms of Section 41 were 1,777, and the preliminary inquiries for diversion were 2,608, and then the Schedule 3 diversion, 108, and the ones that the finalized onerous diversions were 368, and the diversion after enrollment were 3,946. There's also some another aspect which is quite an advancement in the implementation of this legislation. The Department of Social Development succeeded to accredit 345 service providers and also the programs. So the breakdown is what we have there. 55 service providers received full credit, full accreditation. 38 service providers achieved a candidate status. 191 programs received full accreditation. 32 programs received candidate status. 20 programs were declined because of not complying with the policy, the policy framework of accreditation. And 9 service providers were also, they also declined, their applications were also declined. Now coming to the child and youth care centers and youth care centers. As at 31 March 2012, there were 28 secure care facilities countrywide with a total bed capacity of 3,272 beds. And in the Department of Social Development is in a process, therefore, of adding two more facilities which are currently under construction to make a total, therefore, of 30 secure care facilities throughout the country. Now, in terms of the one-stop child justice centers, this is primarily the responsibility of the Department of Justice to designate the one-stop child justice centers. So for the previous financial year, we set to establish two one-stop child justice centers, one at Northwest, which is Motlasana Secure Care Facility, that is in Klerksdorp, and then the second one is Kayale Temba Youth Care Center, that is in Buffalo City in the Eastern Cape. The process of developing the one-stop child justice centers is a fairly new process that involves all the stakeholders, and it requires the collective contribution of resources into the running and the management of the one-stop child justice center. And that alone, therefore, means that there will be, therefore, the continued, it will be the continued responsibility of every department to ensure that it puts aside the budget for the running of the one-stop child justice centers. And we have, therefore, learned from the process of developing these one-stop child justice centers that one could take millions to establish. For instance, the Kayale Temba Youth Care Center, we realized that to establish it, they will need the infrastructure that needs to be developed from scratch in another area, and it will cost the department 28 million to do that. So the process, since it is fairly new, therefore the departments that are responsible for the maintenance, for the establishment and the maintenance of these structures, therefore, are still in a learning curve on how to find the best way possible of doing that. But of course, we develop the minimum requirements for the establishment of the centers, which therefore set the guidelines on how to do this. But since it is a new intervention, therefore we are still meeting the hitches here and there. And also, it requires the intersectoral agreement from the political level of the ministers who are participating in the implementation of this legislation. we have a provision in the Act that says that each and every minister must provide a written consent to the establishment of the One Stop Child Justice Center, more specifically on the collective a contribution of resources. So we experienced, because of that is still a fairly new process, then we experienced a number of challenges in terms of securing the ministerial written agreement. So what is happening now in terms of the One Stop Child Justice Centers, the two that were supposed to have been established in the previous annual year, now they are being in a process of being finalized in terms of the establishment in this financial year. But nevertheless, we have added two more, because in terms of our indicators, we have given ourselves as a starting point two One Stop Child Justice per annum to establish. Now, coming to resources and a budget, that is, it's a challenge. It's a challenge for different reasons. One, we learned that after the implementation of the legislation, that certain resources were not covered during the costing process. As a result now, as the Department of Justice, we have initiated a project where we are doing the provision-to-provision analysis of the legislation. And what do we mean by that? We are looking into one provision at a time and to determine as to what is required by this provision, what services are required by this provision, who is expected to deliver those services, and what skills are required, and also to look at the numbers, you see, of the human capacity and also the skills that we have at the present moment. So it is that exercise, therefore, that will help us also to clean up even the reference system to ensure that we have a system, therefore, that is properly costed for the implementation of the legislation. And the other thing now that we have, which is quite a limitation in terms of the implementation of the legislation, is that most of the implementing departments and institutions do not have a dedicated budget set aside for the implementation of the legislation. The department that presently has a dedicated fund is DOJ, and with the budget that we received in the previous financial year, we received 16,851,318, and then that was the budget that we divided amongst ourselves and the Legal Aid of South Africa and the National Prosecuting Authority, specifically for the implementation of the legislation. But then the rest of the departments, including staff, they do not have a dedicated budget set for the implementation of the legislation, and that is quite a challenge. And other resources, of course, they are still a major challenge for the implementation of this legislation, but we believe that should we, therefore, after we have done the provision-to-provision analysis, we started it with the legislation for sexual offences, and we saw it, you know, coming up with very good results. So we are hoping that even with the Child Justice Act, we're going to be having an understanding, therefore, of the overall resource capacity that is required by the country for the implementation of this legislation. Now, in terms of communication and public education, as the lead department in the implementation of the legislation, we develop an intersectoral communication strategy with the intersectoral committee that is also part of the staff is also part of, and what we did, therefore, as an implementation of the strategy, we conducted 26 26 TV episodes of Dwayela Injustice on SABC2, and that we did in collaboration with the NPA, with SAFS, and also with LASA. And throughout the these episodes, an average of viewership of 1,127,760 was reached per episode, which we believe that it was quite a good number. But what we did after we have done this, that is after the after we have finalized the first implementation of the second implementation of the second year implementation of the legislation, because of the public demand, we had to redo the 26 episodes. But then, at first, they were done on Thursday at night, targeting. They were done on Saturdays, targeting the variety of viewers, and then. The second round, we did that on Saturday on Thursday, and we were targeting the adult viewership because it was the presentation was done fairly at night. LASA, that is the Legal Aid of South Africa, held a sports event at schools, that is in all provinces, and they were educating children on habilitation. And there is also an initiative that was done by the NPA. They held a radio campaign with SABC, which included a focus on child justice, where 34 million listeners were reached. And SAPS and the Department of Education, they also conducted the Safe Schools program, linked to 9,000 schools to police station, and established 6,091 school safety committees. And this is the main vehicle through which SAFT engages children to raise awareness on child justice, amongst other topics. So these are just, we have just taken out the highlights, that what we consider as highlights in all the actions that were conducted by the various departments in the area of communication and public education. The other area that was quite it was quite educational, but now taking the learnings of South Africa to other countries, we hosted information sessions where we included all the departments that are participating in the implementation of this legislation, and we had delegations from Liberia, Mozambique, Nepal, Vietnam, Uganda, Iran, Sudan, and Zambia. And they came to South Africa to learn about what we have done in the area of child justice, because they are quite a very innovative initiative that other countries could learn from our legislation. In terms of the information management system, we are still having a bit of hitch here and there in terms of establishment of the information management system, that is the intersectoral information management system. But then what the intersectoral committee has done is to set up a task team to develop those systems that will allow the collection of data across departments from operational systems, and it will also ensure the use of common definitions to improve the comparability and accessibility of information. What we discovered that is from the first year of implementation of the legislation is that all departments are collecting statistics, but when you look at their variables in terms of the tools that they are using, they are not talking to each other. Yes, one, it is because the mandates are different, but where the mandates are similar, then you find that the definitions that have been used are not the same. So therefore, when you come there and try to do the analysis of the entire statistical account, then we will realize that we had gaps here and there because of this. But now the task team is working so hard to ensure that we have an integrated collection data system. And as SAFT is addressing the redesigning of the management information systems in order to be able to capture other forms of attendance of children, that is through summons and notices. And they are also developing the system to capture the data regarding children under 10 years who cannot feature on the criminal on the crime administration system. And they are also developing a system to capture the notification of probation officers electronically. The limitations, therefore, that are identified as well from the annual report. First is that the first limitation is, yes, there is progressive implementation of the legislation. If you look at the period of the implementation of the legislation and also looking at the fact that it is introducing a new model in South Africa that was not there, and it's a model therefore that places the responsibility on the number of the intersectoral departments. So each and every department therefore is still finding its feet on how to implement the legislation, and also to ensure that the referral system is also structured properly. So the first thing is, we still have the lack of adequate capacity to implement the legislation. But we are hoping that the provision-to-provision analysis of the legislation that we are undertaking in this financial year would also help us, therefore, to determine the collective resource capacity that is required for the effective implementation of the legislation. And the second limitation that has been identified is the lack of dedicated budget allocation, as I have previously indicated, by the majority of the implementing stakeholders, which is quite a discomforting aspect, because we really needed to have budget allocation that are dedicated for the implementation of this legislation. And the second thing now, the third thing, which is quite it has been on news for a couple of times, the recent NGO budget cut that has led to many NGOs withdrawing their services from our court. If you look at the legislation that has been developed and promulgated, it's a legislation that specifies a number of services, but when you look at the diversion services, the diversion services are primarily done currently by the NGOs, and there is no budget allocation for NGOs. And since they experienced the budget cut starting from last year, then our courts are suffering now, and we realized that when the costing was done, it did not cover the services that are required, the budget that is required to cover the diversion services. So we have, as the intersectoral committee, therefore set a task team to look into those issues. Of course, DSD is providing a budget to a number of NGOs, but not to all of them. And our courts were serviced by a number of NGOs that were also not falling under the category of the budget allocations by DSD. So it's an issue that we really needed to look into, and the Parliament also to assist in that area. We also need to investigate therefore the trends in respect of reduction of children charged and assessed, as indicated previously. The other limitation, therefore, is what I have also indicated, the lack of adequate budget to establish and continually run the one-stop child justice centers. As I have indicated that, we have centers that have been identified, like the Kayale Temba Youth Care Center. We really need to, the Eastern Cape requires a center in terms of their statistics of children in conflict with law. The numbers, there are numbers indicate the need for the one-stop child justice center. And when we took a tour, we realized that this center is one that is better resourced in terms of the rest of the centers. But being better resourced, it still needs 28 million. There is also the need for, which is noted also by the DG Intersectoral Committee, of the Integrated Information Management System, which is something that we are actually working on, just to put an end to the statistical variances and the inability to make properly informed data analysis. And there is also the need for the ongoing capacity building to ensure that we have adequate skills capacity in every service point in the very chain of child justice. And we also need to get into an initiative that will help us to explain the trends in respect of the reduction in children charged and assessed.
I'm going to give you 3 minutes to wrap up, please.
The successes that have been achieved, which are the major successes? The gradual rise in the number of preliminary inquiries indicates a growing compliance with the Act, which is quite a good thing. It also ought to be seen as an element that enhances the prospect of children being diverted from the criminal justice system to a system that promotes their constitutional right to be treated in a manner that takes account of their age. And the second notable success is the increase in the imposition of non-custodial sentences as indicated in the presentation, which symbolizes, therefore, a change towards the establishment of a child justice system in South Africa, and it also indicates the prospect, therefore, of breaking the cycle of crime amongst children. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Can I ask, before I open for questions, I want to ask the first question to SAPS, and Justice can maybe, if they want to assist SAPS, they're welcome. I would suggest they don't. Can you explain to us the discrepancies in terms of the number of trained officers? In the In the 2011 report, it was stated that you trained 15,891 between April and March of the next year. The 2012 report states that you trained 18,540 members for that same period of time. Can you explain to us that discrepancy? You know, when subs get to us, it's always a discrepancy in numbers. Please explain that discrepancy. Members, I'm going to open for questions. I see the Honourable Kula Barnard, the Honourable Mululeke George, Honourable Sibian, Honourable Mulubati in that order.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I must say, I came to this meeting as the Police Portfolio Committee hoping to have input on the SAPS implementation of the Child Justice Act. I wanted information on how many children are sitting in SAP cells nationwide, how many have been found there. I myself have found 4 children who've sat in SAP cells for over 2 years in Richards Bay. There was nothing on that. I want to know if children are being housed in cells with adults, if they are being taken to court with adults in the same vehicle. All illegal under this Act, there was no reference at all. So I don't know if there was some confusion, perhaps, on what we would need as a portfolio committee, or there was confusion, maybe you were given the wrong presentation, whatever it was. But I just sit here not knowing what I was hoping I would know at the end of the presentation. You know, we heard mainly about courts, correctional services, the sentencing, none of which really relates to what this committee focuses on.
Sorry, can I just for clarification say the meeting is on this report, and that report, that is what we asked for. The additional information, members are welcome to ask SAPS now. The presentation focused on the report, and we've got to accept that they could not go outside of the limitations of the report. So any additional information that members want from SAPS, you are free to ask them now. That's why we are having this meeting, so that we can prepare for the joint meeting.
What I'd like to know is, what does the module on vulnerable children entail? It seems very, very few SAPS members have been trained on this. In fact, there's a dramatic decrease in training from 2010 to 11, from over 18,000 down to 14,000 members trained. Now, this is priority legislation, which should be taken extremely seriously, and yet the training is a drop in the ocean in relation to the numbers of operational members, the vast majority of whom have not been trained in the implementation of this Act. We see this every time we go to a station. We say, tell us about the implementation of the Child, the Act, the Child Justice Act, and they look at us blankly. So I think there's a major disconnect between having passed the Act, saying it's out there, it's working, and the actual implementation at station level. The figures of children arrested, detained, and referred to probation officers, those under 10, those figures just aren't provided by SAPS. This relates directly to this Act, and it seems to me there is no possibility that the SAPS can, in any statistically correct manner, speak to the successful or not implementation of the Act. I don't think we know where we are at all. And finally, there's a dramatic decrease in diversion orders. Now, there are references to alternative policing methods in relation to children. I'd like details of that. And are they, and do they in any way relate to the decrease in children being arrested? Do we take this to mean that, surely not, that less crime is being committed by children? I doubt that very much. I don't think we can take that as realistic. Is there a possibility that because of the Child Justice Act and the National Instructions on Children in Conflict with the Law, SAPS members are simply not arresting children any longer for crimes, perhaps because they believe they're not allowed to, because they are not trained on this? Or is it possible that the Act is so cumbersome to implement that it's simply easier for them to allow criminal children, juveniles, to go?
Honourable Mullah Lakey.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, just for clarity, you, before I come to my question, you keep on mentioning Kaile Temba. Kaile Temba is at NU1 in that line. I come from that district. Kaile Temba has been there. It has never been associated with children in conflict with the law. In fact, it used to be what we used to call those days an orphanage. Now you come. Of course, been up and down. Now it's been changed now for children. It is just an orphanage. It had nothing to do with children and conflict with the law. Now you seem to be associating. I just want clarity. You seem to be associating it now with children and conflict with the law. It's been there for many years. In fact, I was still a young man. Kyle Temple was there at NU1. So can you just tell me, when did this town start to be a children in conflict with the law, not an orphanage? The training said 2,600 police. Would you be able, or the police, be able to tell us the spread? Because I think that's going to help us. Is this 32,000 fine? Is it found in all police stations or in all provinces? Because the if you have spread this 30,000 spread, then you're going to have a serious problem. You're probably going to police stations where you don't have a trained person. Also, what is the correctional service? Of course, they are not here. The number of people trained in police is 200.
I'm going to ask me members to focus on the police part of it. We will have a joint meeting with correctional services and everybody
okay,
will be. So just focus on the police part.
Okay. No. APS statistics and the statistics of DSD do not tally. Can you explain what the reason? Why the statistics don't tally? You talk about 28 secure care facilities and two being built, but can we know what is the ideal number? Because you go to police stations, they tell you that the care facility, child care facilities is so many kilometers away that we are sometimes not able to take them to a care facility, so we are forced to keep them in a police trap. So you took 28. What is the ideal number? Of course, with what you have mentioned in the program of the budget, how do you hope to? Your communication and public aid, did it go to the rural areas? Because sometimes you people talk about communication when in actual fact it only goes to towns, the suburbs, and to a lesser extent, townships. I think they sometimes, most of the time, especially in government, the rural people are not counted as existing. They are probably a last part of the rural area. So your communication, does it go to the rural area? Can I go to Kongota, to Makridi, to Lagalaka, to Mungu, and say, do you know about this thing? Will they know about it? The NGO budget, the cut. You know, this is a big problem because they were doing a very good job. Did you, in your intersectoral meeting, discuss why this cut? Because, you see, they were doing a job which the government could not do. Now, instead of now enhancing and capacitating and helping, no, you decide to cut. Why are you not looking at this thing of the NGO? Because they were doing a good job, and they knew what they were doing, and they were really, really committed. Why should you allow...
Again, with the social development issue, so can we ask you to focus on police?
Okay, so...
You've run out of questions now.
No.
Can we get somebody else now? I'll come back to you again. Honorable Sevilla, please.
The other question has been covered under vulnerable children. But I would like to know whether who is responsible, is it SAPS who is responsible to ensure that the children do attend the court cases?
Thank you, Chairperson. The presentation was not very clear on many issues. It was more of complaints than the substance. My first question goes to, it's about, do these new recruits, do they receive the in-house training? My second one is, you spoke of the decrease from 75,435 to 57,592 of children who are charged. Is this an achievement or what? My other question goes to about the 28 secure care facilities. Who builds them? And the other question is on the how this legislation came into effect from the 1st of April 2010. But I hear you keep on mentioning processes as new. Mm-hmm. So I am sitting here asking myself, when do they cease to be new? Because 2010 is quite a while ago. When will they cease to be new? My other question is, you complain of a budget allocation
did the department submit a proposal to the National Treasurer for the allocation of budget for training of members? Thanks, Chair. Yes, thank you.
Honourable, I'll come to you. Can I just ask a few questions as well? I'm also worried about the low level of arrest, and with all due respect, we can tell you that in our constituencies, and I come from a rural constituency that serves 32 wards, that people will come to you and say the police refuse to arrest children because for whatever reason, lack of training, cumbersomeness of the law, not understanding, etc. So my question is directed to SAPS. Have you started looking at why it is that your members are reluctant to arrest children when they are in breach of the law? And what are you doing about it? Every single police officer at some stage will get or have the possibility of getting in touch with a child in breach of the law, specifically visible policing. Now, we can't say when we've trained 32,000, and added to Mr. George's question, I would like to know not only the spread, but the ranks of those people that were trained. Where are they? Who are they? We can't say that that 32,000 in a service of 165 is a drop in the ocean. Secondly, we also know from experience, not only on this act, but from other acts, that the training leaves much to be desired. And that what nationals sometimes see as training is basically giving the officers a book to read, not explaining it to them. We know that, for instance, SAPS still don't know about the fingerprint legislation, just to show in terms of what we're talking about when it gets to legislation. SAPS, ordinary SAPS members, don't know. SAPS specifically, I would like SAPS delegation who are here to explain to us how you can prove to us that this is actually a priority. Because you know where in your budget hearings, you were here for 5 days. That doesn't help the problem, General. It's a fact. You were here for 5 days. You indicated to us, this is what we set aside for training, for implementation, for anything in terms of the Child Justice. Are you in any way able to tell us that it is a priority and to back it up with the finances that you have spent on this and that you plan spending? Also, in this financial year, you didn't indicate any forward planning in terms of the implementation of the Child Justice Act. Not in terms of training, not in terms of the cost. This act requires that you move children with sedans, etc., not in terms of vehicles, not in terms of anything. So can we get an indication from SAPS? How do you prove to us that this actually is a priority? You didn't mention it once, not one single time during the budget hearings. And what is SAPS doing? If I understand you correctly, when you were presenting advocate, you indicated that all departments will have to contribute to this one-stop centers. That includes SAPS. So again, no forward planning from the side of SAPS. When they came for the budget for this year, current financial year, not a mention of that. How are you going to provide your part, your contribution to that? Or when do you see yourself actually making a financial contribution to this? Why are you struggling to finalize the two identified centers, and how long do you think it's still going to take, and why, if you're struggling to finalize these two, how realistic is it to say you're going to establish two more? Just that for the first round, Ms. Kulabonat, if you can make a quick question and then I want them to start answering and then we can take a second round.
Yeah, I think this is a general question, and it's to the chair and to the various representatives here. This is the second annual report on the intersectoral implementation of the Child Justice Act. Intersectoral, that includes SAPS. And if you look in here, there's nothing by SAPS. There's a page that says there's nothing available by SAPS, because they don't have the statistics. And the questions I asked were very valid, because that is our input. That's how we look to see if this is being implemented. And there's not a single reference here to SAPS transporting the children to court, where they're detaining them, whether they're actually even acknowledging that this act exists. So I think that is an issue that has to be addressed. Where is SAPS in this document? It says it includes them, but they are nowhere. They are nowhere in here.
Okay, I'm heading over to the department. You can start answering, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I will start with the issues raised in terms of the training figures that we need to explain. The annual report that was presented to Parliament, the first annual report, that gives the figure of 15,891. That figure did not include the briefing sessions that were done when we implemented the Act in 2010 April. So at that point there was an initial drive of going to brief people at police stations, and it wasn't a formally accredited training program, so it wasn't a 2-day program or a 5-day program, it was half a day briefing session. So at that point they didn't include it in the figures. But subsequently when the training figures were audited, those training sessions were added. So that is what explains why the figure in the second year's report indicates a higher figure than we originally reported, because the figure was updated with those briefing sessions.
So can you explain to us how you justify a half-day briefing session, your words, to a 2 to 5 day training session, and then add it as audited figures? Surely it can't be the same thing.
It's not the same thing. It was listed as 3 separate initiatives. So there's a 2-day work session, then there's a 5-day course, and then there's a briefing session of half a day. So it's aggregated on our system. It shows that it's different courses. But when we gave the total figures of everybody that was trained there, then it was added. But it was not added as the same program. We have the figures that's aggregated, and it shows a separate initiative. Just to answer then in the second year, that initial drive to get everybody briefed on the Act was excluded, which accounts to some extent for the lower figures in the second year. So we do have the disaggregated figures, and we can provide that. But it does show that in the second year, the focus is more on the longer courses, because now we've done the initial briefings, and now we're training people more in-depth in the next session.
Sorry, General, I'm going to stop you because this is very important, what you're saying. And it's conflict, conflicting yourself. In the first year, you've trained 15,000 people. So the briefing was done for 3,000 people, if we look at the next year's report. Now you tell us you've trained 8,000 people. How many? 8,000 people. And you want to tell us that because the focus was more on training, but the first year you trained almost double that figure. And I'm still now wondering, of that 8,000, how many of them is actually 2-day, how many is 5 days, and how many is just simply been briefings? I think the department in writing will provide us a breakdown of all those figures.
We can provide that breakdown, and what I just wanted to add is that we did, in the course of monitoring the training figures, we did pick up that there was a decrease in the training, and at that point we set training targets with each of the provinces, and since then the training figures increased again. So we did pick up, as you did, that there was a concern that we were not training enough members at a certain point in the last financial year. We will provide the disaggregated training figures, and we can also provide the figures in terms of the ranks of members trained. And it was members trained across the ranks. So we have management trained, but we also have members at an operational level trained, and most of them are in the visible policing environment.
So we want that breakdown as well. Provinces that they were trained in, the number per province, the levels they were trained, how many attended the 2-day, how many attended the 5-day, how many attended the briefing sessions. Doesn't help you train management and you're not training your ordinary police officer.
What the module on vulnerable children entails, and Brigitte Mnati will go through that in detail. I just want to talk about the statistical issue that we cannot, that I think that is a very valid point, and we also try to make that in the presentation and in the report. a lot of the information that we need to really monitor whether we are dealing with this act correctly is information that we need in our systems that currently is not being captured on the system. There's been an initiative from the team in the police that deal with this, with the technology management services to capture, basically do a user needs assessment of what is it that we need to capture on our systems, on our operational system. But also we want to be able to, as we do the work and capture them on the operational system, to be able to verify from the system that we hand over, for instance, to social development. At the moment, the systems don't allow us to do that. So we literally need to go and track individual cases and go into registers and find the facts that filed to see whether there was a fact sent to social development. It's basically a valid point that we cannot use the systems at the moment to adequately track and monitor whether these things are done properly. So we have done that assessment. There is a team that was established that's currently working on that. They're going to do some initial changes that's on the current CAD system, but some of the changes that's needed will need to go on to the longer term development of the system. I think you are aware of some of the systems initiatives that they're busy with, the integrated case document management system. Some of these issues will only go on to those new systems. In addition to that, the issue of children in police cells will be...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Is it not true that the issue of the systems was highlighted in the first report already as a challenge, and now you're telling us you're still working at it? What planning was done before this legislation was implemented?
So some of the initiatives that we're talking on, it was started even before this legislation was initiated, as you know, in terms of the Integrated Justice System Initiative. But so there are some changes that they will be able to accommodate for us, but some of the longer term changes is part of systemic improvement that has been initiated a long time ago, like even the detention management system, where we in detail included the requirements for the Child Justice Act. Even before the Act was implemented, we made provision for certain initiatives that will allow us to determine when there is a child being held, how long they're being held, but the detention management system is not being implemented yet. There is a tender process underway at the moment. This is, I think, very frustrating for us as well, because it's processes that have very long lead times. So I know that I cannot give an adequate answer on that. Basically, that deals then also, although I know it's an inadequate answer, but it deals also with Honourable Colabora's initial answer, that why don't we have details of children that are being held and how many children are we holding in police cells. We will follow up a specific issue she raised in terms of Richards Bay. The children under 10 at the moment, because we initially when the Act was implemented, CAS did not yet incorporate the change that a child under 10 cannot be charged. So then we picked up initially a number of problems with children under 10 that were charged we could address on a case-by-case basis. Since when the CAS definitions have been updated, so now you cannot on CAS charge a child, which means that CAS doesn't give us any information if we want to pick up if we're dealing incorrectly with children under 10. Which is, again, that's a specific requirement that we're putting into the new system, so that if the police find a child under 10, they cannot charge the child, so it will never go on to CAS, but they need to find a way of electronically capturing that so that we can pick it up and we can ensure that that child has been correctly deferred due to the necessary social services and probation officer particularly. Then the issue of, are there fewer children who offend, or what do we make of the fact that the number of children charged and the number of children assessed are going down? That is a quandary for the Intersectoral Committee as well, because one can interpret that in different ways, and I think one possible explanation is already as given by the various members. It could be that the police members are not well enough familiar with the Act, and therefore they're hesitant to act, but it could also be that because the national instruction says we must arrest as a last resort, it could be that in some cases the Act is correctly being implemented, but in others it might be that it's because of ignorance. So we don't know. That's why one of the reasons why we're starting this pilot project now in Mpumalanga and Gauteng is to actually track specific cases and find out, is the police acting correctly? Are they handing over correctly? There's the issue with the assessment. We might be charging a child, but that we might not be informing the probation officer. So social development is saying, from their perspective, the reason why there might be fewer assessments is because police are not informing them. But we don't know whether that is true, because there's no proof. We cannot prove that we did refer unless we go into every one of those cases. So in these two areas that we're going to work in, we are going to go into every one of those cases. We are going to see did police refer every single case to social development? So it's the only way we can really determine, are we handing over properly? So is the reason that we're not dealing with the implementation correctly, or is it actually that there are fewer, when we apply the act correctly, that there are fewer children that we need to charge? Because in the past we would arrest, now we would not necessarily arrest, but we can charge without arresting, because there are alternative methods of bringing the child before the court without necessarily arresting them. The spread of the members train, it is all over. We've already indicated that we'll provide those details, but it has the details of which stations, which levels and everything. The issue of stats and these statistics that do not correspond, I think I spoke to that to some extent, but one of the reasons also is currently what we provide to the Intersectoral Committee is the number of charges against children. The CAS captures every charge, so not necessarily every child charged, but every charge where the offender is captured as under a certain age. Social development deals with the assessment of a child regardless of the number of charges. So there will always be a difference between the number of charges against children and the number of children assessed. But if we make the improvements to the system that we're envisaging, we would be able to say, okay, we've had so many charges, but these were against the same child, so that one child would need to be assessed. And then we would be able to determine whether the figures correspond to social development. But at the moment, that is not possible. In terms of the issue of this communication program going to rural areas, from the police, I must just say the first issue to communicate to the police internally, all the information went to every station. We did it electronically and in paper, and we verified that all the stations got it. This is a very big issue for us, that we must be able to ensure that the stations receive the national instruction, receive the list of probation officers that they must refer to. So it was placed on our intranet, it was emailed, and it was faxed to those stations. So we have a list of the stations that do not have access to the internet. So we verified, and we actually from national sent it to them specifically. Then in terms of the communication programs, our programs go through every police station. So the police stations initiate the awareness programs, and the specific instructions given them when we focus on children in Child Protection Week, in Youth Month, these are specific thematic months. We ask the police stations to do specific work with Child Justice Act and the Children's Act, for instance. So every police station will engage with their stakeholders, with their CPS. So if it's a rural police station, it would go to a rural community. Because the method of engaging is through the police station with the existing stakeholders. But we have also asked police stations that in terms of the community safety plans that the police station and the CPF does, they must focus on this legislation, but also the domestic violence and sexual offences legislation, in an ongoing engagement with the communities to ensure that communities understand their rights, but the role of the police as well in terms of this legislation.
I wish you didn't mention the Domestic Violence Act, because we know that you, after how many years, still haven't reached that point either.
Then there was a question on whether the new recruits get in-house training. In the report, the information is, I think, broken down in more detail than it was in the presentation, where we do indicate that the program, the 5-day Vulnerable Children program, is actually presented as part of the basic training of the police recruits as well. So all new recruits would do this training as part of their basic training, and the members who have already completed their basic training would do it as part of in-service training. So we've dealt with both of them to make sure that the recruits all do this training. Madam Chair, can I then hand over to Brigadier Mnati to just speak about the detail of the Vulnerable Children module, and then General Johnson and General Haldane, if there is anything they want to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The whole idea of the Vulnerable Children Learning Program is to ensure that at least our members know what the processes and procedures are, the thinking and social context within which you handle children who are in conflict with the law, and then provide them with also all the practical issues. In that manner then, Honourable Chair, we have the social context training being part of the module of what goes into their training. Firstly, they need to understand children and have to be handled differently from adults, why they have to be handled in this manner, and why then children would need to be kept separate from adults, kept boys from girls, and so on and so forth. Then it goes into the details of the legislative mandate and the policy mandate provided by the National Instruction for Children in Conflict with the Law, which I think would also answer one honorable member's question, which is, do people understand that there are processes and procedures? Children have to be kept separate from adults, children have to be transported in a certain manner, and so on and so forth. As it happens, a supporting process to this is that we have a transportation protocol that we have finalized with all stakeholders within the Child Justice Committee, which indicates exactly the responsibility and handover. Now, another aspect is dealing with the immediate actions that need to be taken once you come across a child in conflict with the law. Things such as ensuring that the parent or responsible adult is notified, and this could also be another relative and not necessarily the parent, whether a child may not have a parent or any other person who acts in parentis of the child. Also ensuring that people also understand that we need to immediately, as soon as possible within 24 hours, notify the probation officer. And that you only can detain children in a police facility if there are compelling reasons.
Sorry, Mama, I think you're not answering the question. The question is, what is the curriculum? We don't want to know the detail in terms of that. That is what is in the Act. We all know that. The curriculum, day one, this is what they do. Day two, this is what they learn. Day three. I mean, simple. What is the outcome? If you don't have it, tell us, then we... Then you provided this in writing.
Simply, ma'am, we have a social contest. We have national instructions and policy mandate. We have other administration processes and procedures people have to cover.
Can you continue with the other questions, please? There's still questions outstanding.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the House. I'm going to deal with the transportation of arrested children and detained children. Our instructions is that arrested children and detained children are the responsibility of the detectives to transport these children to and from court as well as to the...
I'm going to stop you. We didn't ask that question. We didn't ask the question. We know exactly what the Act says and what must be done. We asked, how did you budget for it? Where is it reflected in your budget? How can you prove as such? Because nobody in such has proved to us yet that this is actually a priority that you plan for. So those are the outstanding issues. We didn't ask what is the... We know exactly what should happen in terms of the transportation of children. What is happening? How are you making sure that it's happening? Where's the budget? What is your planning for this year? What is the budget for this year? How many people do you plan to train this year? That answer we didn't get either. So can we go to the detail? We don't want to know what the Act says. We know what the Act says.
Ma'am, I think, with all respect, I think the issues relating to training will have to provide the House in writing the answers.
Chair, I'm sorry. It's not the training that we're asking for. It's not the Act that we're asking for. We're asking if SAPs are implementing the Act. Are they adhering to the tenets of the Act? It's no good keeping on reading us bits of the Act. It's no good saying we must look at the training. We're asking, pleading for information on whether or not it's being done. We're on the ground. We see it's not being done. We want the information from you. We can read these things in a book.
Okay. I don't know why you're struggling. Answer these questions for us. What is the budget that you are spending on the child justice training, child Justice Act training. Do you know?
Ma'am, I don't know.
I don't have the figure with me, but we will be able to provide the figure in terms of the training. In as much as the in-service training programs are specific programs that are budgeted, the basic training program is included in the total basic training program, so it wouldn't be possible to give it this aggregated figure of what amount of basic training is spent on child justice. I think that's one of our specific problems with the budget. I will speak about the budgeting process and what processes we went through, but just one particular problem with us is that the implementation of this act is integrated into the operational policing function. It is the community service centre that deals with certain aspects. It is the members out there that respond to crime, that might respond to a child offender. So as you correctly noted, every member might have to deal with a child offender. So we cannot necessarily on an operational level disaggregate how much of our funding is spent on dealing with child offenders. Maybe one could do a projection that you'd say this is the percentage of child offenders, so this would be the percentage of the budget. But in terms of how much operational funding we spend, that it's very difficult to disaggregate. Prior to the implementation of this act, when the budgeting process was done and we the cluster budget, first cluster went through a budgeting process, we did have an in-depth discussion with the CFO of SAPS on the requirements and the cost drivers needed for the implementation of this act. Essentially, the cost drivers are included in the operational environment, other than the training, which I think we would be able to disaggregate some of that. But in terms of the operational requirements, vehicles, the when we detain, in the cases where we detain, it's a short-term detention requirement. It's very difficult to say this is the amount you need because it is so integrated with our normal function. But at that point, the allocation that was provided for visible policing in particular, but basically for the functioning of police stations that would be dealing with these functions, was adequate for the requirements to implement this act. I don't know if Dr. Haldas can speak about that in more detail, but essentially we went through the process and at that point our budget did allow for us to do what we needed to do. We did also engage in depth with supply chain management on the vehicle issues to make sure the stations have enough unmarked sedan vehicles for the transportation of child offenders. And the difficulty in terms of monitoring, I have taken note of the issue that stations might be dealing with incorrectly, but the instructions even before the implementation of this act is that children must be transported separately from adults, boys separately from girls. So that's not a new requirement, it's an existing requirement. What's new is that we must try and transport them in an unmarked sedan vehicle. The detention requirement on the police is actually less than it was previously because now we're saying we should really not arrest and detain a child unless there's a very stringent requirement for when we arrest and detain. So in most cases now, the child wouldn't be detained by the police. The child would be released to the care of a responsible adult or in some cases to a secure care facility. So there would be a very small requirement for detention in the police. Something would not justify an increase in spending in terms of police detention. But so I think Akhil Sambula will speak to the issue of the secure care facilities that was asked.
You haven't answered all the questions around the budgeting. The budgeting issue is also, what is SAP's responsibility in terms of the one-stop centres? Where are you budgeting for it, etc.? That's what we ask.
Yes, ma'am, I'm coming to that. That is the last point. On the one-stop centres, the process that SAP's went through, when the original decision was made and the designation was made for the centres that going to be established. SAPS went through a detailed work study investigation to determine the post requirements. Our responsibilities in the one-stop centres is essentially to provide for the initial detention of the child and to make sure that the children from the feeder police stations are transported to the one-stop centre where they then will be initially detained if detention is required by the police, and then they will go into the child and youth care centre that is integrated into the one-stop centre. So the police responsibility is essentially detention, basically providing, making sure that the child is safely detained and transported to the centre, and then from there on, if for instance they are referred somewhere else, then they would be transported to, for instance, if it's a child youth care centre that's not locally at that centre, they would be transported there. Our cost drivers would include the members that would be deployed, their salaries. It would include the vehicles and the transport fuel for the vehicles, the food for the detainees. And we've done a detailed assessment of that of the two centres. That has been submitted and approved, and we have now submitted the documentation for the minister to give his formal approval based on the in-depth analysis that was done by the work study a official. I don't have that report with me, but we will be able to give that specific, oh, I probably have it on my computer, but I have the, we have a specific amount that's needed for police for both of those centres. And in terms of the designation of the new centres, we will go through the same process. It's an in-depth analysis that's done by work study officers, and then they work out the budget based on the salaries, the food, and the vehicles that's needed for the police to provide the service we need to provide at that one-stop
centre. Advocate, do you agree that that's going to be the only responsibility from SAPS in terms of these one-stop centres, financially?
Yes, I think that General is actually covered everything.
I'm asking that question because this committee, when dealing with budget, will they not okay one single cent more if you tell us that is the only responsibility of SAPS in terms of the one-stop centres? So you're not expecting SAPS to upkeep those centres, you're not expecting SAPS to contribute in terms of the building of these one-stop centres, etc. SAPS is responsibility. You agree with the police that is the only responsibility.
It is actually difficult for a department at first to identify the costs that it will be responsible for. Because when we develop, when we establish the one-stop child justice centers, there's a process that we engage with. First, there is a selection of a site, which therefore is a standing site, because we do not, we have, as we start with the establishment of the site.
We understand all of that. We want to know whether you agree with SAPS that that is the only commitment in terms of the one-stop centers.
The each and every department has to ensure that it is responsible for the continued management of the site. So meaning that after the establishment, therefore they need to continue providing the resources that they've committed to provide in terms of the letters of agreement that are received from the ministers, that are also linked to the costing analysis that is being done.
Simple yes or no. Is there an MOU that says, SAPS, you are responsible for X. The people that are going to be the paying of their salaries, does it include the upkeeping of that facility where the people are kept? Is there something like that available?
Yes, we do have. We develop a service level agreement that specifies all the responsibilities of the various departments, and including staff.
Can we get a copy of that, please? Continue, please.
The question was that we submit a specific budget request to the Treasury, and the answer to that is no, because there was already an adequate budget. I think I've answered as well as I can at the moment in terms of the one-stop centre. Then there was some requests to answer on the rural secure care facilities, which is social development, but Advocate Kabula will deal with that in more detail, and also with a question on Kyle Kemba. And I will just check, Madam Chair, if there's anything else I haven't responded to while she answers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a question on whether we should, why are we talking about the Kayali Temba Youth Care Center? The process of establishing the one-stop child justice center is not looking at establishing a structure from scratch. We are identifying the structures that are already there that then are identified specifically by the provincial fora. And then the resource needs is also put together and submitted. So for Kayale Temba, it's one of the centers. It's actually the only center that is the provincial forum of Eastern Cape identified as proper. So that is why we are then upgrading it into a one-stop child justice center.
No, you're not answering my question, Advocate. My question is, my understanding
Do Ross, can I ask you to work through me, please?
Okay, sorry, Madam Chair. I thought you have left.
You can carry on.
My understanding is kindly somebody that often is. Now, I understand you deal with children in conflict with the law. Now, my question is, are you now changing Kaile Tema into an institution of children in conflict with the law, not orphanage or something people like?
Madam Chair, may I? Good morning to everybody.
Just introduce yourself. So
yes,
please.
I will. My name is Fatima Alvin, and I'm from the Department of Justice, and I work with the the Child Justice Act. The center at Kaile Tema, and you correct it, in Mdantane, is a center which is a DSD facility which offers services in terms of SASA and other DSD services that they provide. The center is currently not, it's not the orphanage one. This is another center. It has wings available, and that is where the one-stop child justice center is to be established. So it's an existing center. It is not the orphanage one. It's a center that DSD currently utilizes in order to provide SASA services to the community surrounding there, as well as other DSD services. I also just want to say that in terms of the struggle to finalize these issues, the reason is that we have to refurbish it in order to meet certain standards. For instance, we are going to designate a court there, so the court will need refurbishment in terms of which DPW needs to be involved. And then going right back to the beginning, we need to get clarity from Buffalo City who is the owner of the land and whether we can actually refurbish. So I just wanted to provide that little bit of clarity. So it's not the orphanage one. This is the one where currently the services from DSD, social development, are being provided. So would that be sufficient? Thank you. Thank you.
Is there any outstanding questions?
Yes.
Just remind him because I don't seem to forget, Mr. George. Have you still got one?
No, what is the ideal number?
The ideal number for secure centers, one-stop centers.
Can I just add in that regard, the secure care facilities are the ones that are erected by social development, so we don't really know what the ideal number would be. What we think would be ideal would be to have one in each town, but that's not going to be possible. So currently what they're doing is they're trying to add, and I know the one that they're looking at is in Mpumalanga. So the idea would be to be able to have secure care facilities wherever the services for children need to be provided in terms of children who are in conflict with the law as well as the social services. But the ideal thing, I'm afraid, I'm not able to give it to social development would need to give you that.
That is problematic in itself. Because if there was coordination, and if SAPS had made their input, Justice has made their input, there should be an informed decision for social development. It shouldn't be a thumbsuck figure. So that in itself for us is problematic. That they that as a coordinating body, you don't know what the ideal number is. We are going to ask that that number be provided to us, please.
That also, thank you, I am very worried about Justice. This is one area Justice should be hands-on. I don't believe that you can come and tell us that. First, one of the problems why this law is not able to be implemented is the absence of this facility. For instance, when we were in Pala, we find children, they will ask them, why are you keeping these children here? They say, no. We only got one facility. They name the place. The place is far away, but even there, the place is full. So you're not going to be able to implement this law if you don't. Now, I also agree with the chairperson. I'm very surprised that Justice supports with the linking department says, no, we don't know, we're waiting for social development and other departments. This is what, if you want this plan to be implemented, this is what you must check.
Mr. George, I think in defense of Justice, it's not only them, it's the coordination that needs to take place. The fact that SAPS don't have reliable figures either, I think is adding to the fact that nobody really knows. Because if SAPS admitted that they can't capture exactly what is happening, they're still in the process of that. That adds to gaps in the total system. Is there anything else outstanding? I want us to break for 5 minutes for tea, and then I want us to come back and take a second round of questions if there are, and for a wrap-up of the meeting. Just take you come back, please, and those who were sleeping around the table, take call.
Yeah, but Kyle is here with
return so that we can wrap up this meeting, please. Is the coffee outside, Jesse? Okay. If I can ask members to get their coffin. Is there any member who still wants to ask a follow-up question or a further question? Can we get an idea from SAPS? Have you, and I'm asking this question against all odds, getting a positive answer to it, have SAPS looked at the Act to see whether there are any legal challenges because of the way that the Act is drafted that makes it difficult for the full implementation of the Act? I'm asking that question because we've asked you for the past 10 years the same question about the Domestic Violence Act. And we hope not to be asking the same question around this Act as well. Have you done such an exercise? Do you believe it's necessary? Does the Department of Justice is welcome to give their perception as well, whether you believe that the Act, after 2 years of implementation, that there are, whether there are aspects that needs to be revisited or things that we need to change in terms of practical experience on the ground. Over to SAPS.
Madam Chair, I'm Tarsius Geldenes from the Police Service. Okay. So if I may respond to your question, but let me start off by saying that SAPS was involved in the drafting of the Child Justice Act from the beginning, so we made our inputs, and where we foresaw any difficulties, we raised them. Now, the legislation is not ideal. I don't think any piece of legislation anywhere is ideal. And we are in constant discussion with the Department of Justice concerning areas where we find difficulties. But let me make it very clear from the outset that SAPS is committed to implement this legislation. And it is true, if you look at the figures of children arrested, that the numbers are coming down. But I think it is also true, and one must take that into account, that the purpose of this legislation is exactly to prevent children from being unnecessarily arrested. So there are many instances. The lowering of the numbers may also be ascribed to the fact that the police had in the past arrested children in circumstances where it was not really necessary. So therefore, this is a factor that is...
You know, can you respond to the question, what aspects of the Act do you believe needs attention?
At the moment, there are no specific aspects of the Act that we believe should be changed immediately or in the short term. We are in discussions, as I explained, with the Department of Justice to ensure that we raise the issues and get agreement on the interpretation of certain sections of the Act. So if we can reach that agreement and if we can implement it along those lines, no problem.
Justice, from your side?
I will take this question together with my colleague. The first thing that we think as the Department of Justice now, but then speaking on behalf of the intersectoral a committee that is responsible for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. One of the things that has been noted is that when the costing for this legislation was done, it was not done properly. There was no a determination, the accurate determination of the services that are required by the Act. As a result now, we believe that this provision-to-provision analysis that we have undertaken is going to give us a clear picture of the resource capacity for the implementation of this legislation. We'll be able to know, for instance, how many youth care centers do we require, and how many one-stop child justice centers do we require. We will also be able to know as to how many staff members that are required to implement the legislation, and what kind of training that they require as well, because it's going to be looking as well into the skills capacity and, you know, what kind of training that is required and what capacity do we have on the ground presently in terms of those skills that is required in terms of the provision of a particular, in terms of the implementation of a particular provision. So that is basically that. But then there is also a request that we have received from DSD. They are requesting the amendment of a particular provision that our minister is considering right now, which we think as a department is one issue that we really need to consider. And the other issue is, which is quite very critical, the fact that the NGOs now have experienced a budget cut, but not from DSD, from the lottery, the fact that they've experienced that budget cut has brought us down, and it also made us actually to wake up as government that those services were actually the services that should have been costed from the beginning. And, you know, we allocate the responsibility to a particular department and ensure that it is funded in terms of providing those resources, and not to leave that with DSD alone, because we as well as the Department of Justice are receiving services from the NGO that were not costed. So we believe that the provision-to-provision analysis will actually help us to deal with that. If there's anything more...
Do you want to add?
Yes, please, if I may. In the intersectoral meetings that we have, what we've done is we've asked departments to highlight out of the practice that has developed over the last 2 years, the question that you've raised around challenges in terms of litigation also that may arise. With that in mind, we've decided to do this review of every section per section and to see whether in effect it is implementable, to use that word, on the ground by all the sectors. So at that particular, those particular sessions that will be held now in this financial year, we will then be able to see whether in effect the provisions that apply to SAPS can be implemented the way they are, or whether they in effect need to be amended or not, or whether there is best practice that's been developing out of this. So that review is currently, it's actually the terms of reference and all of them have been drafted. We're hoping that that will show us that there aren't areas, or there may be areas which actually do need to be re-looked at. The Act, as we know, is a very broad Act and requires a lot of input from departments, but we're hoping that process will reveal what we need to do.
Anything else from SAPS side? Wait, there's one more question on this side. Honourable Mulabatsi.
Chairperson, mine is just a follow-up on the training to the advocate. Is this five-based training effective? Is it sufficient? Does it? Do you see results? Thank you.
As an outsider, the five-day training that SAPS provide. No, we want to know from, the member wants to know from Justice. As an outsider, but involved in the legislation, do you believe that the five-day training is efficient and effective within the SAPS?
This is one area that the analysis that we are doing right now is going to be looking into across the board. Even the training that is delivered by the Department of Justice, we're going back to it to check as to whether it tallies with the requirements of the provisions of the Act. So it's a process that we are definitely going to be considering also for SAPS. But right now, I don't think that we'll be having a straight answer to that, because even with our training, it still needs to be reviewed as well.
Are there any last comments from Subside before we move on? Then I want to summarize. And I want to start off by saying that once again, like with the Domestic Violence Act that is now 10 years on the books, we get SAPS telling us today very passionately that they do not have any challenges with the legislation. They were involved in drafting this legislation, etc., etc., as they were with the Domestic Violence Act. Yet on the ground, there is a different story. For us, it's not about whether arrests of children increase or decrease. It's about whether the child that finds itself in conflict of the law was given the opportunity for alternative justice, a deviation program, so that that child does not become a repeat offender. And every single time that SAPS does not fulfill its obligations, and that we get at our constituency office and wherever else, complaints from communities to say, this child did X, Y, or Z, but SAPS refused to do anything about it. That child has been denied that opportunity. And that is what it is about. It's not about the race, General. It's not about lowering or increasing the arrest. It is about giving that child in conflict of the law, with the law, an opportunity for corrective measures. SAPS, not doing its part, denies every single child that it does not do that with that opportunity. We want the following, and may I make it clear from the start. SAPS, there will be no extensions granted in terms of this. Don't even write us a letter to ask us that you want to submit it later. Training. We want a breakdown in terms of how many did it in the 5 day, the 2 day, as well as the briefing. Where are they? And again, in terms of the breakdown of 5 day, 2 days briefing, the ranks of these people, at what levels are they? The curriculum, a detailed curriculum of the training, 5 days, 2 days, as well as the briefing. Your plan for the 2012-2013 year in terms of training, insofar as Child Justice Act is concerned. Again, break it down. 5 days, 2 days, briefing. The budget issue, the money spent 2010-11, 2011-12, and your planned spending for the 2012-13 on this legislation, SAPS. We want a detailed rollout plan and costing from SAPS in terms of getting your information systems on par. This committee last year in the annual reporting phase raised the same issue. You were then also unable to provide the statistics in terms of children. You were even unable to provide the statistics when we looked at rape in terms of male and female rapes. We want to know a detailed rolled out and implementation and costing of that system, IMS requirements, so that you get yourself in line to be able to provide that those statistics that are required. We want a clear indication, because I do believe that we got a bit of a stepping around in terms of answering this question, on what SAPS's role and responsibility in terms of the one-stop centre is going to be in terms of financial and human resources. With that, also, if we can get a copy of the MOU. We further want to have from SAPS your national instructions, standing orders on this act. All of this we want by next week, Monday. None of this you should not have readily available. You should have had it here, because you came here to respond to questions. You should have been able to give us those answers clearly. You were not. If we want to see a reduction in crime over the long term period, we need to intervene where it starts. And I think this is what the Child Justice Act in many ways are trying to achieve. And I do think, even though we're going to have a joint meeting on this from the side of the police committee, we are worried about what is clearly a lack of proper planning before the implementation of the Act, as acknowledged by yourselves as well, in terms of costing, but also in terms of what the different role players are going to have to do. If we're not going to see proper coordination from all departments in this, the Child Justice Act will not be having the necessary effects as it's envisaged. We want to warn SAPS, and I want to use the word warn, that we will not allow SAPS, as with the Domestic Violence Act, to continuously defer on this issue. We've asked you today, what is the problem? Are there problems around the Act? We were told in no uncertain terms that you have no problems. We were told that there's a review, which I'm glad, because maybe somebody else should look at whether SAPS actually have problems. It's not, I don't know why SAPS have this problem of not acknowledging when there are problems with a piece of legislation that makes it difficult for them to enact that piece of legislation. On the one hand, we're told that no legislation can ever be perfect, but SAPS never acknowledge what their challenges are. Never, in terms of legislation. Not with the Domestic Violence Act, not with this Act, neither with the Firearms Control Act, to mention but three where we've seen throughout the years that SAPS have problems implementing. We welcome the announcement that there's going to be a review also in terms of how you integrate all the steps, etc., etc. And we welcome that. And we're looking forward to hear what comes out of that as well. It is worrisome, though, that proper costing for this legislation was not done before the legislation was implemented. As I said, Monday, SAPS, we want the answers to these questions be submitted. Thank you very much, Department of Justice, SAPS, members. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.